Welcome to the Catbird Speaks, the podcast for the Catbird Seat, the White Sox blog on the ESPN Sweet Spot Network. You can find this podcast on iTunes by searching the Catbird Speaks, and then you can subscribe to it and just get regular downloads and not have to go through whatever crazy rigmarole that you did to find it this time. Joining me today in Madison, Wisconsin is Ethan Spaulding.
Hey guys, what's up?
Joining us in Arizona City, Arizona, is Matt Adams.
That is not generic enough, but it'll do.
Are there towns or counties where you live?
Yes, there are towns, there are counties, there are neighborhoods. It all exists.
I am joining you in Elkhart, the bosom of civilization in Indiana. I'm James Fegan. And the White Sox season just ended. I watched it die Sunday with my mother.
That game was a perfect way to end that season.
The only highlights of that game were Frankie Montas, Trace Thompson, and I guess Tyler Saladino played kind of well. I probably wouldn't have bet much on either of those guys playing on the Major League roster in 2015. And certainly not if things were going well. So the fact that they were like the only pulse in that lineup, like,
weird. Well, that lineup was one of the worst lineups I've ever seen. Like, that totally trumped any of the hangover lineups. I mean, Trace Thompson batting third, Avisail Garcia was the second best batter in that lineup. Think about that.
Which is remarkable because he was pretty bad. He was at his maximum chopping the ball into the dirt self.
I think that was a preview of what we have to expect now that Robin Ventura has the confidence of the front office that he's, you know, keeping his job.
Saladino batted leadoff, by the way.
Alexis Ramirez was the DH.
Not really engaged. I think he had a couple first pitch pop-ups.
I mean, he does that a lot, even when he is engaged, presumably.
So I saw somebody tweet out, it's kind of interesting, if you recall, he made his debut in center field, and he'd make his White Sox finish if he's not retained here as a DH. So that's kind of weird. Every other game he played pretty much was at shortstop.
Well, the whole second base here.
Oh, that's true.
When he's a rookie.
It's less cool now.
Yep. Ruined. I think getting rid of him would probably be a bad play.
Unless you're actually getting someone good. I mean,
which would be really hard because the shortstop's not an easy slot to fill. You got enough problems to deal with.
If you don't buy that he's a negative fielder like Fangraphs seems to think he is, or Fangraphs War thinks he is, he's like a middle-of-the-road shortstop if he doesn't have his garbage April, and that's a lot of qualifiers, which is the problem.
I mean, he did have that garbage April, and this of a not really distinguished offensive career, this was his worst, so he is a year older. I mean, I can understand just saying, nah, forget it.
Not distinguished offensive career. He's a two-time Silver Slugger winner, Matt Adams.
AL shortstops have been so bad for so long now.
Yeah, he earned those Silver Sluggers. He was the best offensive shortstop in those years.
He was the best shortstop in the American League last year. Sorry to Brad Miller. He fell off a lot this year, and I wonder if they can restructure his contract, because that's not a dude I want to be paying $10 million, and it's not a dude I think is getting $10 million on the open market, but he wants to stay. He said he can't imagine playing anywhere else. I wonder if they could restructure it and make him paid like $5, $6 million instead.
How do you restructure it without giving him like another year?
Because it's an option year, so you just decline the option and say, we'll keep you for $6 million rather than $10 million.
Without the fear of not being hired somewhere else, I don't see how that benefits him. I don't know if he loves Chicago that much.
Well, he said obviously take it with a grain of salt, but he said he couldn't imagine playing baseball anywhere else. And I mean, I'm just saying that one, I don't think he's getting multiple years on the free agent market. I don't think he's getting $10 million on the free agent market. Like, coming off this year, maybe I'm misjudging his market, but he's, like, not going to be high. Like, he's not a guy who a bunch of players are going to, or a bunch of teams are going to be lining up to get. I mean, Torrey Hunter got $10 million this year, and I think people think higher of Torrey Hunter coming into this year than people are going to be thinking of Alexi Ramirez coming into next year.
Okay, so with the math here, I mean, it's a $1 million buyout, and, I mean, could he get more than would make up the difference of what the Sox would shortchange him trying to bring him back on a weird restructure?
It'd be $9.5 million. I don't know. I mean, maybe.
So it's like $1 million discount to another team. Like another team would basically have to pay him $8 million to wash that out, right?
Yeah. I mean, I don't know. I could see it working. It's we're haggling over a couple $1 million here, which
it seems a little less ridiculous talking about it now than I first thought when you said it initially. But also, it's impossible to get into these guys' heads with this stuff. Plus, they have agents that are, like, forcing them to do things a lot of times. I mean, not gun to their head forcing, but, you know, don't take no for an answer type of stuff.
I mean, the whole decision process is haggling over a few million. It's basically deciding whether or not to pay Alexi Ramirez to possibly be his old self or completely punt the position and just save a lot of money on Tyler Saladino being bad.
Or, I mean, there's the trade market, which would mean if you're getting a competent shortstop, competent shortstops are very valuable, and that's something you'd probably want to talk about in a potential big-time trade of either prospects or a guy like Quintana or Rodon. I mean, that's obviously that's a more than competent if you're trading those two guys. But in terms of the free agent market, Ian Desmond wouldn't be the worst option. He'd be more expensive than Alexei. Much worse defensive shortstop than Alexei.
This is sounding pretty bad.
But he's a much better hitter. Despite being basically Alexi Ramirez, Starlin Castro bad at hitting in the first month, he rebounded to have about a league average season at shortstop offense. A league average, total league average, I believe. Like a 100 weighted run created plus or something like that. He's significantly better than he was way worse than league average. But if that guy rebounds, he's better, I think. He hit 19 home runs, that would be second on the White Sox.
Jesus.
Adam Eaton was second on the White Sox in home runs this year.
This was an offensive bounce back year for pretty much the league, but just not the White Sox.
Yeah, nope. They got worse somehow. Jim Margulis was saying today, like, basically just put, like, even the 2014 offense with this team, and it was a 500 club with their pitching staff.
This team might make the playoffs, considering, or at least the wild, like, they'd be a wild card 2 contender.
Right.
And I think that's why a lot of us picked them as a wild card 2, because if you pick the 2014 offense at Adam LaRoche, who is supposed to be good, that's why all of us were like, oh, this team can contend.
It's supposed to be playable. I was hoping for, like, a 110 weighted run created or something like that. It would've been really nice. I kind of feel like this season was a very large disaster, if only because all the free agent money, it seems like hard to move at best and, like, awful at worst. Like, LaRoche and... I don't know why you would buy Zach Duke's contract if you're an outsider.
According to Fangraphs War, Adam Eaton, Jose Quintana, Jose Abreu, Chris Sale, Carlos Rodon, to the core, they made up 83% of the White Sox WAR this year for 16% of the salary. The other $88 million... aside from those guys, contributed 3.2 WAR to the offense to the team in total for $99.2 million.
That's so gross.
That's bad. Is what you're saying?
It's really bad. That's a lot of really bad money. And I mean, some of that is actual zeros, like the money going to Diane Vicieto, money going to half a season of Emilio Bonifacio after he was cut, going to Jeff Kepinger. That money's all cleared, which is nice. The Sox have $88 million committed to 10 players this offseason, and they don't really have any big arbitration cases, the guy who's going to get the most money in arbitration of their players is going to be Tyler Flowers. He's going to get like $3 million. So
you got the instant, you know, contract for Gordon Beckham, of course.
Everybody else escalates. Like this kind of, the salary's going to go up. I mean, you don't lose much next year. You lose Kevinger, and you know that's not huge. But everyone else that has like those escalating contracts, Sale, Abreu, they all go up.
Right. That's it. Totals up before arbitration to $88 million for 10 players. And that's including the Sale going up, Quintana going up, Abreu going up. And then the rest of the team is guys like is a bunch of arbitration-eligible guys. But most of them, like, the arbitration-eligible guys are Avi Garcia, Tyler Flowers, Dan Jennings, Nate Jones, and Putnam. Those guys aren't getting a ton of money. So if they don't re-up Alexei, they'll probably be around $100 million.
So like they're not like super hamstrung. I just wonder, getting such poor returns on free agent outlays, if that's going to. I'm constantly just not having a lot of confidence in this team being aggressive.
Oh, it hurts. It hurts a lot. And if Jerry's not going to spend, it's going to really hurt. But I mean, if this team's supposed to be a contender in 2016. I don't see why they shouldn't be putting $130 million into the team.
Rickon's been talking a lot of shit about, you know, this is still the time. So he can't say that and then do nothing because we can't spend any money.
Right. The Sox this year, supposed to be a contender going into the year, in Chicago, they had $118 million payroll. Yeah, that's a big up from last year, which was $92 million. $92 million was like 22nd in baseball. $118 million is only 15th in baseball. If you're in a contending team in Chicago, especially one that has as big of a holes as this team does, shouldn't be a league median payroll. I think that they really should have room to add money. If Jerry really wants this team to win, and if he's a man of his word, and I don't believe that necessarily, don't really have much reason to believe that, but there's no reason this team shouldn't have a payroll around $130, $135 million, which is right where the Cubs paid. And the Cubs are paying nothing to a bunch of players.
So their attendance actually went up this year. It was still really bad. Like, it was under 1.8 million.
Well, they had the season ticket commitments come in pretty hard.
Yeah, well, they say that a lot. I just didn't actually believe them that much. So they basically went up like 100,000 people in attendance from like 1.65 million to 1.75 million.
You remember how they played it? Like the initial season ticket renewals and purchases enabled them to go get Melky Cabrera?
Yeah, well, I've...
which we all thought was kind of garbage in the first place. But what would have been funny is if they had gotten LaRoche last and they said that, and then after he was terrible, we could blame the fans for, for bringing LaRoche to the
floor. Melky Cabrera was a below replacement level player in 2015.
Yeah, him coming back strong though really kind of ruined that narrative and that.
Oh, for sure. I think second half Melky is more indicative of true talent Melky than first half Melky. But I hope that's the case, because that's kind of important for 2016.
Yeah, it's very necessary.
Because you can't have Melky Cabrera being a black hole too.
But like, oh, he's probably not totally toast as a player is like the free agent success story of 2015.
Right. I mean, just like Adam Dunn, comeback player of the year 2012, 1.5 war player, was a free agent success, kind of.
It's like David Robertson of, well, nothing looks physically wrong with him. He's just blowing lots of saves, I guess, is the other contender. Hey,
David Robertson.
I assume he's fine. They probably didn't feel like they got great value this year.
I mean, who cares? closers are susceptible to random variants like that. If it's going to come in any year, it might as well as come this year. I chalk that up to variants more than true talent problems.
The variants, and then I think, James, you've written about it a couple times. He definitely mentioned his frustration level and kind of forcing the issue a bit. And, you know, he'll step back from that, hopefully.
Basically, if you signed David Robertson to a 1-year contract, and he had this year where his ERA finished in the mid-3s and he, like, led the league in blown saves. The fact that, like, he's probably fine, his peripherals look good, his stuff looks fine, wouldn't be, like, a great solace to you because you paid for, like, 1 year and didn't really get what you wanted?
Right.
Well, sure. We all kind of cringed at the multi-year element of it, no?
I bet David Robertson coming off of this year, if he were a free agent, gets 3 years, $30 million easy.
Yeah, sure.
So I'm not worried about that. Even if he didn't have a great year, I'm sure he's not the problem, and I'm not worried about him going forward.
Yeah, basically what I'm trying to say is that the best White Sox free agent success stories are, yeah, he had a bad year, but he probably doesn't have to retire.
I wish LaRoche would pull a Gil Mesh. Just go hunting for the rest of his life.
I was really holding out for that hope. I was asking all sorts of questions about what has to be paid or how can Adam Dunn be talked into retiring after 2011. It ended up not being so bad, but I was like, man, this is bad.
I just, like, doesn't the opportunity cost of, like, a season kind of outweigh however much money you owe him for 1 year to, like, have a huge negative at an offensive-only position?
Yeah, 1 year makes it easier to cut that. And I was actually, when I was in New York, I was talking to Jim Margulis about this. And his thought was he's going to get that chance initially. And then ultimately when he fails, Trace Thompson is going to be moved from just fourth outfielder to, you know, everyday fourth outfielder and kind of giving everybody those DH reps.
But doesn't that include, like, having Avisail Garcia in the fold?
Well, it could or it could. I mean, something's going to be – free agent money is going to be spent somewhere. I mean, there's no way they're not spending anything. So hopefully, as we've discussed in the past, the most opportunity lies within right field. So that'd be nice.
Or designated hitter, possibly. And I doubt they give money to Chris Davis, but –
they're not going to come right out on a DH with money, though, with the LaRoche thing there, though. That's just
keep right. Doubling down.
Yeah.
But if it's Chris Davis, I think they would maybe just cut LaRoche. If that's the only option. I don't think that I don't like that idea that much, because I don't like the idea of giving $100 million to an aging first baseman, big first baseman that hits a lot of home runs, because we've seen how giving money to those guys has gone with the Sox in the past. Obviously, the ideal is the 25-year-old freak defensive outfielder in Jason Hayward, but I think everyone wants that. And you'd have to triple the biggest contract in the history of the team to get that.
The biggest contract in the history of the team is an absurd bargain.
Other than the Danks deal, every big deal, or every a lot of the biggest deals, Burley's contract was a big bargain. Sale was the biggest contract ever given to a young pitcher, I think.
Like, to have a $60 million contract be your biggest contract ever, like, Kevin Brown broke, like, the $100 million barrier, like, I feel like 15 years ago or something stupid. Like, they basically have never played market value for a star-level player.
That is absolutely true.
Dodgers signed Kevin Brown for $105 million December 13th, 1998. Frank Thomas was, like, still in his relative prime.
I think, was that the tail end of... No, that's later time. Never mind.
The A's biggest contract in history is Eric Chavez at 6 years, $66 million.
Yeah, that didn't give him PTSD at all.
So... that's the only team I can see. And I'm looking at a 2010 list, but I'm retroactively applying, like, other teams' contracts.
If you're, like, bad at developing, like, hitters, and you blatantly, like, went to save money and, like, all these trades you make from your 2013 teardown, like, I don't see how you do those two things and are magically exempt from having to, like, pay for big money offensive players.
The Royals, A's, and White Sox are the only teams never to give Padres are the only team never to give $100 million contracts.
James Shields didn't just get $100 million?
No, I think he was only like $460.
Yeah, I know that apparently broke the record that previously was held by Joaquin Benoit for a free agent deal for them.
Their biggest contract in history was Peavy at $352 before that, before the Shield's money. The Marlins just gave a ton of money to Giancarlo, so they're off this. Oh, the Pirates haven't given $100 million out either.
What'd they give the Cutch?
The Rays either, obviously. So Rays, A's, Royals, Pirates.
Yeah, how is the McCutcheon extension not over $100 million?
Because he signed the McCutcheon extension is an absurd bargain. Like,
they actually robbed that man.
Yeah, it's more of a robbery than sale.
He was walking home to his car. And...
yeah, McCutcheon got $51.5 million over six.
Well, all right then.
Huntington like came up around another car with a gun pointed at him.
See, and the Sox have multiple guys that kind of are on, you know, contracts of that nature. And their thought is, like, now we're just going to pocket this money instead of, like, that sucks.
Who the hell do you think they are?
They're paying $29.5 million in 2016, which is less than Kershaw's getting paid by himself, to Sale, Quintana, Eaton, Abreu, and Rodon.
I mean, come on.
That's
spend.
They paid to those... five guys who were literally all of their WAR production this year, save for three WAR. They paid them a total of $19 million this year. Like, they have some absurd bargains. There's a non-zero chance all five of those guys are all-stars in 2016.
They make me watch Mike Ault again. I'm not going to be happy.
If they... that's the thing that's so infuriating about this team is they have such a good core, and everything but the core is just complete and utter shit. Except I guess David Robertson's kind of okay, and so the bullpen's fine.
Yeah, it's fine. Zach Putnam post injury is pretty grisly, but otherwise he should be fine.
But if you take away Abreu and Eaton from the offense, it's. I mean, look at the lineup they ran out on the last day of the year. Obviously, that's not...
Trace looked great.
That lineup is worse than the early season Iowa Cubs lineups.
Diff.
Oh, that's ridiculous that that's so true.
Oh, it's absolutely true. Granted, the Iowa Cubs lineup of early season is basically the Chicago Cubs lineup now, so...
Did it also have Mike Ault in it? No, he was on the Cubs at the start.
He was on the Cubs.
No, they had the good sense to get rid
of that. Mike Ault, first player to hit home runs for both teams in the city in the same year. And...
Give him that statue.
That one home run, he hit two just bombs. Too bad he can't see.
He hit two bombs, but, like... I don't know. I feel like we should play some game with evaluators. I don't know. Where, like, there's some way you could wipe their memory where they didn't recognize the guys and just, like, make them pick out the guy who used to be a top prospect and, like, have them try to identify Michael on, like, a random given day.
There was a thing towards the beginning of the year.
If you don't see the raw power, he's like, he doesn't look like a major leaguer.
But you know, there's a thing towards the beginning of the year of, like, there's, like, a certain threshold of, like, a spot that a guy can hit a home run in a major league game, like, a distance that kind of indicates that he's going to be a good enough player to stick around. And I don't remember exactly what was all within that, but it was an interesting idea. And Mike Trout, Mike Ault seems like somebody who could break whatever idea that person was trying to put forth.
I mean, so would Joe Borchard, so would Willie Mopena.
Yeah, that seems like test for guys with huge raw power.
Definitely, but yeah, it's...
No, but I'm sure statistically, like, these guys are very anomalous. These guys who have such extreme raw power that even though they have no contact skill, they'll randomly run into a ball and hit it 460 feet. But,
no major league skill. Old used to, like, be, like, a good, well-graded third baseman. He's like Mark Tian out there.
You know who were very similarly regarded, like, 2 years ago? Matt Davidson and Michael.
Jesus.
Yeah.
They're collecting.
Michael got, like, so off balance, like, charging bunts on the third baseline. He was throwing frisbees over to Brady.
He was a defensive third base prospect, and he can't even play defense anymore.
What's Brandon Wood up to? Maybe the Sox can bring him into the fold.
Didn't they a couple years ago?
Oh, don't do that.
Didn't they have Brandon Wood on a minor league deal at one point?
I mean, it makes sense. Why would he not be part of this organization?
It wasn't him. It was, they had some other former top prospect that they signed to a minor league deal, and not Lasing Millage, who they also had.
I mean, Connor Jackson was once a top prospect you want to talk about.
No, it wasn't Connor Jackson.
Mike Old is only 30 years old. Got to be some pop in that bat.
Wait, Mike Old's 30?
I'm sorry, not Mike Old. Brandon Wood is only 30 years old.
I mean, how old was Jose Bautista when he figured it out?
Oh, God.
My favorite thing as a result of the Jose Bautista thing was people like, oh, let's find the next Jose Bautista. Let's find the next journeyman minor leaguer who's going to hit 54 dingers in a year. And everyone was trying to find him, and there hasn't been one since.
Might as well be like, find the next Mark Burley.
Right. Oh, that's what people want to find with Kyle Hendricks, though.
Or the next Greg Maddux.
Man.
Yeah, that got thrown on really quick.
That Kyle Hendricks train is, that bandwagon's growing. I'll be the last one on it.
It is, it's actually got a partnership deal with the Jackie Bradley Express.
Jesus. Oh, it was Dallas McPherson who I was thinking of.
Oh, he played. He played Major League Games.
I know he played in the games. I knew it was someone who played in the games.
I think he retired with the White Sox organization.
No, he got some time with Pittsburgh last year. Or in 2012, never mind. Unless he went to Pittsburgh and then the White Sox. I don't know what order this was in.
2012-ish sounds about right for the McPherson area.
He had a negative 28 OPS plus for the White Sox in 2011.
He was a top prospect, right?
Oh, yes.
Him? Yeah, I mean, he started with the Angels, which is why I confused him with Wood. But, man, the PCL is really something else.
He was number 12 globally pre-2005. What if they had, like, the White Sox had swapped Creedy for him or something like crazy like that? Some terrifying alternate history.
Then they would have even longer since they've had a Cummins in third baseman.
You don't think they would have developed him? So there's been some actual news this week that we could discuss. The White Sox fired their bench coach, Mark Parent, whose contract was expiring anyway, but they dismissed him a whole three games early. And what basically just reads as some sort of weird rebuke of the Ventura administration, but not quite going to the level of firing him. Like, so clearly your coaching staff is, like, not getting the best out of the results on your team that you want, and you want to change things, but you don't actually... You're not pulling the trigger on probably the problem source.
And then Rick Hahn's press conference that day, or is addressing the media, however it worked out, the only real change that was made was Parent, and then he specified that they're going to be implementing a lot more data usage into the dugout during the game. So does that imply that Parent was like, get these papers and spreadsheets out of my damn face when they tried to suggest any of that?
And I feel like they probably were just like, we need to make some change. So,
I mean, Parent had said things to imply that he was very old school, but the White Sox had also kind of like peppered 2012 with quotes like, there's a lot more openness to our analytics than there were before under Ozzy. Like,
there's a certain Cubs writer who gets a lot of flack for saying he's a much better data or a much better game manager than Joe Maddon.
Oh God!
But I say this, I would, in terms of tactical decisions, I absolutely believe that I'm a better tactician than Robin Ventura. But that's a much lower bar to clear.
Is that going in your Twitter bio?
No. It's not, because I'm not that guy. And unlike my tweets, which go to 400 people, this will probably go to 3 people if they even make it this far.
What are you saying? Our listenership stats are better than that.
I've never looked at them. I just kind of assumed they were like my high school radio listener stats.
I just assume everybody starts it and quickly abandons ship.
Maybe this week will be better.
Thanks for listening, all. I guess there's like 8 of you, not 3.
Like hundreds.
Really?
Yes.
Really?
Yes!
It's true, Ethan. Although this is not the most captivating content at the moment. Discussing, it's kind of meta. Like, we're actually discussing the existence of the people that may or may not be listening.
So our pet theory is that Rickon probably thinks that the Ventura regime is bad and Jerry loves Ventura and is keeping him around and this is the compromise they struck. Pretty much. Is that the idea?
Yeah. I mean, I don't know. Maybe it's possible Robin Ventura is really good with players. I mean, the players like him, which is fine, but he's so bad tactically. Like, he does things at points where it's literally the opposite of what makes sense. Stuff like intentionally walking Jeff Francoeur. And that's where I get things like saying I'm a better tactician than him. Because I would never, and no at all rational person would ever intentionally walk Jeff Francoeur in an important game. And wasn't it in 2012 when he did that?
Yes. I remember I wrote an article about that. According to the book, one of those intentional walks is okay.
Really?
Because Eric Hosmer was so bad against lefties that year. Like, he was like a 60 weighted runs created plus against lefties while facing Chris Sale.
That also would presume that that's true talent representation, which the book would dissuade you from doing. It'd probably regress that a little bit. So,
and off the top of my head, I'm thinking Jeff Francoeur is actually his only strong suit probably facing lefties.
He's a platoon righty, and Hosmer had not yet shown.
Okay, fine, but it's still walking Jeff Francoeur. I'm not doing that ever.
Yeah, you have Chris Sale in the mound. You probably should just have him strike up both guys.
I think the bigger part of the job, obviously, is what he's good at. I mean, it's just the part that we can't see is the only problem with
it. But where are the results?
Yeah, that's the thing. Like, I believe in guys like Dusty Baker. I think there's a reason why he keeps getting jobs. And no, I don't want him on the White Sox because I don't want him to blow out everyone's arm. But I think there's a reason why Dusty Baker holds his job for a while and his teams generally do pretty good. Because I think that dude is actually good with players. And there's absolutely no way I could tangibly measure that. But I genuinely believe it's the case. I have no reason to believe in the positive that Robin Ventura makes his team better.
Like, is he like good to work with while you're wildly underperforming? Like,
right. Like, that's the thing. Like, if Robin Ventura is making his teams better, these teams are so terrible. Like,
like Rickon should be fired.
Right.
For turning out like these 60-win true talent teams.
It's all guesswork. It's like, you know, the fact that we don't hear things like anonymous player comments or just actual players saying or hinting things that you hear a lot of times about managers, even if it's just small little things. I don't really ever hear that with Ventura, save for that one weird incident with Alexei in Detroit. And also, there's something, and this is guessing again, but the way the White Sox started, like, that team didn't lay down, at least. I mean, they still stunk because that was actually just, like, the way a lot of them were playing. And some of the team is just legitimately bad, but, like, it would be very easy to have a team that started out that poorly never really recover and become so disgruntled and then start talking shit about each other or the manager. And you didn't see that. And that's, again, you have to guess as to why, but
It's not a national situation. We don't have Matt Williams here, even though I think they're about as bad in terms of in terms of game management. I don't think people actually hate Robin Ventura. I don't think veteran presence is in the line. I don't know if you guys saw this, but apparently Jason Wirth saw he wasn't in the lineup in an important game, tore the lineup card off the wall, slammed it on Matt Williams' desk, and said, fix it. I don't think that's happening in the White Sox clubhouse.
Yeah, he also, the crux behind that was that no one had told Wirth at any point.
Right, right.
And it seems like Robin's probably a better communicator than that.
Right, that's kind of what I meant. Is like, he's definitely, like, maybe managers really don't matter all that much unless you find a, like, in terms of doing anything, and then maybe Robin's fine, but I still think you'd want a better tactician because you have to be able to find a former player who's better than Robin Ventura. I mean, Joe Girardi's a former player, makes a lot of right decisions. Like, it's the tactical stuff that I just never get because he makes so many bad decisions.
Well, they're about to start allowing, or actually I think they started allowing iPads in the dugout, so maybe they'll just program some stuff in there for him and say, go get him, Robin.
Larry from Southside Sox, while in the immediate wake of parents firing, brought up Jose Valentin, which on its face is a good idea. It also just raises the idea of if they really wanted to like support a former Sox, why don't they like find guys who are like in the minor league managerial ranks accumulating experience?
I'm sick of former Sox because Jerry is so overly loyal to them. I really liked Merck tweeted after Parent got fired, they were talking to Raul Ibanez. That's something that I like. If Raul Ibanez, like...
But that's another guy with no coaching experience.
Right, but he was a finalist with the Rays for a managerial job. He's fresh out of the major leagues, so you can probably, like... It's not like he's been sitting on his ass for a decade like Robin has, like coaching little league teams. Like, he's fresh out of the major leagues. He's bilingual. Apparently a great clubhouse guy. Like... That's a dude for the bench coach role. I wouldn't mind at all in seeing how that goes. But we're also talking about bench coach, which is just like, we don't know what managers knows, we don't know what value managers add. Who the fuck knows how what a bench coach adds?
I just thought mostly Parent seemed like the guy who would be useful in all-out brawl and... could scream audible profanities whenever they cut to the dugout. That was a lot of his value that came from that.
So you're saying Robin wouldn't be good at that because the noogie thing or the like?
It's on his track record. He can't get rid of it. He just freezes there. What is he doing? How do you run up to the mound and just stand still for like 2 seconds?
He's a guy who thinks he could fight, who's never been in a fight, and then realizes he's fighting Nolan Ryan, which is exactly how I would be in any fight, because I've never gotten in a fight. Like, that's it. Like, I think that it's in the moment he's like, this is a good idea, and then immediately realizes, oh shit, I've never fought anyone in my life.
I would make it into it, and then I get hit once, and I realize I'm not this mad.
Is this a new podcast tradition, is to talk about our brawls?
I don't have any brawls to talk about. I've never gotten in a fight.
All right, we'll fix that my next trip.
Well, next time me, James, and Mao are together, James and Mao are fighting to the death.
This is true.
Well, I guess it doesn't have to have me together, too, but they're fighting to the death, so maybe I'll join in the death fight.
Someone needs to give the statement to the police.
So, whatever happens with coaches, players, whatever,
and
we're only going to have the presence of Hawk Harrelson for half the games.
I am very, very happy to hear that.
I am tempering joy until they name what they're going to do and to replace him.
Fair.
I don't know. Like, if they replace him with Mike Huff, I'm going to be like, half the games are going to be Hawk saying awful things, and then half the games are going to be really, really boring.
I think they've already ended the Mike Huff experiment, I hope at least. But I think Hawk will play a lot. But I mean, I guess it's going to be in, you know, stretches since he's making road trips. But to have to listen to Hawk less will make, when you do listen to Hawk, way more bearable, because part of the pain is the absolute repetition and the same exact phrases and lessons every single game.
Oh, it's brutal. Like, I actually always, every opening day, I always somewhat enjoy Hawk. It's, like, refreshing, and it's, like, whatever, and, like, he'll talk about baseball, and then, like, a week in, he finds his pet theories, like, a week into the season, and then he'll repeat them all year.
Well, he needs a pet theory for why the White Sox have gotten to another awful start, and then it just kind of sticks from there.
Yeah, what was his pet theory at the beginning of this year? It was bullpen, because the Sox had a terrible bullpen last year and the Royals went to the World Series with a good bullpen.
I mean, he was already kind of crowing about that before that even happened. It just kind of like made him even more entrenched.
Yeah, he went higher with that, and he went a little bit louder with the first rule of baseball is catch the ball.
Oh, yeah, which I've never understood that. Like, why is that the phrase? Why is it the first rule of baseball?
I'm sure he's spouted many first rules of baseball. It's just like that is best shortstop I've ever seen.
I think that's about
30 different shortstops.
Catch the ball is the permanent damage the 2013 defense did to him. I mean, to be fair, I can't imagine watching it that close all the time.
He's definitely more bearable when they're not awful. I mean, when he's sulking, he's at his worst.
He was despondent during the last game. He was just like, oh, this is depressing. He's like, I'm sorry, Steve. Sorry that you had to be the analyst through this.
He was supposed to scale back this year. He stayed on because he was excited about this great team he was about to watch.
So why should we be convinced this is going to stick? If they like sign like Jason Hayward, he's going to be like, I'm going to do 175 games this year.
Because maybe this team could have broken him. This team might have broken a lot of Sox fans. I think if the Sox have an amazing offseason, like let's say the Sox have an offseason where they sign Hayward, they sign Ian Desmond, and they keep Alexei, so they really re-up on the defense. They somehow trade Tim Anderson for Todd Frazier, and they suddenly have a really good team.
Oh, Tim.
I don't want to do that trade, by the way. But he's still, like, I think there'd still be people like, without confidence in the team after how it's gone in recent years where they're trying to contend. And I would definitely not do Tim Anderson for 1 year of Todd Frazier, by the way.
I would if I thought I was going to be fired at the end of 2016.
Right.
Yeah, just throwing your chips. Yeah, Frazier especially, considering he tailed off huge and that was already kind of an outlier going on.
Right. That's why I don't do it. If he had held up his production from the beginning of the year, it's a different conversation. But Tim Anderson, considering the graduations, Tim Anderson's going to be a top 25 prospect going into the year. Like, that's the best prospect the Sox have had since Sale in terms of numeric ranking, I think. I guess Rodon was top 10, so never mind.
If Frazier's walk-up song was something from What a Time to Be Alive, would you do the trade?
No. What a Time to Be Alive is also Future's worst project of 2015.
Out of like seven.
Out of five. No, four. Monster was in 2014.
That's God, also you really had a bad second half.
Todd Frazier?
Future?
Yeah. Or Future. Because Future did not have a bad second half. Future is also apparently releasing another album before the year's over with Mike Will Made It.
Matt, your thoughts?
I got nothing.
No, Todd Frazier was one of the major tankers. Like, him and Dozier were major tankers in the second half this year. Dozier fell off a ton after people were starting to declare him the next Ben Zobrist.
Ben Zobrist? As if the situation didn't already piss me off.
Yeah. We mocked that extension, and it looked really stupid that we mocked it last year, and now it's okay that we mocked it.
It's still dumb. They didn't give him any extra years. They just gave him a raise. It's the same freaking shit with Phil Hughes.
And Phil Hughes totally tanked this year.
You're not running a goddamn real estate office. You don't just give people raises because you like them.
The Angels did that with Mike Trout. They renewed his salary for his third year at $1 million when they only had to give him $500,000.
Well, I mean, that's trying to curry favor with that guy.
Yeah, chump change for goodwill. That's not useless at all.
True, but I'm just saying it does happen.
We're like, you don't have to like wine and dine Phil Hughes like 3 years from now to like. He's just looking for a major league contract. I was really going to be upset that frickin' team made the playoffs, that garbage-ass starting rotation.
I was going to be upset they made the playoffs because they shouldn't be better than the White Sox. I still wonder what an alternate universe looks like where the White Sox make the trades the Mets did before the deadline. Getting Uribe and getting Cespedes. Because I think that team is pretty close to contention.
I find myself uniquely offended by teams with below-average starting rotations because that's, like, historically the only thing the White Sox can do year in, year out. Like, they even have bullpen fluctuation, but, like, the starting rotation is, like, the like the building block that they always have in place. So a team that just kind of says like, eh, we'll just like have Jason Vargas be our number two. No, we made the playoffs anyway. I kind of be like, oh, go fuck yourselves.
So the Royals and the...
Every team that's employed Jason Vargas.
The Royals, the Twins.
Well, the Twins, the Royals last year, to some extent, and the Twins to a large extent this year, were just like a whole lot of sequencing on those, like...
Right. Royals this year are a lot of sequencing, and I don't know if it's a true talent or they just have 2 years of outperforming expectations, because they're like run differential stuff doesn't paint them as nearly as good of a team as they are, other than like they're really hot April, and that pitching rotation sucks. Yeah, ass.
Part of it is the way that defense just works. Right,
no. Should be better at winning close games than other teams.
I think that team is a team, and this doesn't happen in baseball often, I think it's a team that's better than the sum of its parts. Which isn't in, like, that's something you talk about in basketball or football where teams actually have cohesion. And the Royals are one of the few teams in baseball where that actually really works.
Yeah, they piss me off.
Yeah, me too. I mean, Yordano Ventura is a jag. Their rotation behind Cueto, and I guess Yordano's kind of picked it up, looks really bad, and I hate bad pitching, like you said.
I'm fairly confident in them making an early exit in the playoffs, which makes me feel good to think about.
Oh, I think they'd get smashed by the Blue Jays. I think the Blue Jays, I mean, we never know what happens in the playoffs. They'll probably get swept in the first round because everyone thinks they're going to smash people. But that team is a fucking behemoth.
Yeah.
Like, now that they got Stroman back, and Stroman looked awesome his last couple times out. I think he went 8 innings in his in the clincher with, like, 9 strikeouts and 1 walk.
Yeah, Stroman, that has shown no rust, has basically a fresh arm and probably a boatload of motivation going on.
Right. And then they got Price, obviously. And then that lineup, they're getting Tulo back. If Tulo is the guy he used to be, like if Tulo goes on a hot streak, it's over.
Burley died, though.
That was sad.
That was like watching the last scene of Old Yeller in a loop. Maybe he donated actual body parts to Stroman.
Speaking of Rockies that were traded or could be traded that are owed a lot of money, I wonder what it would take to get cargo.
I would have thought, especially before the second half of the season where he hit like 30 home runs, that you would just mostly need to offer to eat the whole contract.
Right. I was so on board getting him at the deadline. Like, that was my dude. I was like, okay, the Sox should get cargo as he's got a couple of years left. And then since he became my dude, he's hit like 35 home runs. That's the weirdest 40 home run season and probably the quietest 40 home run season.
Every 40 home run season in Colorado is quiet.
True. Didn't Arenado hit more home runs on the road than he did at home?
I'm not saying like he didn't deserve to hit 400. I mean, like, or 40. I mean, like, that organization is garbage and no one cares.
They're what I would fear the White Sox becoming if they go through a couple more years like this last one.
Yeah.
Yeah. White Sox are approaching Padres and Rockies territory, and it's kind of scary.
Is the White Sox offense so bad that they could play in Coors and they would mess up the park factors?
The White Sox defense, the weirdest thing about this whole park factors thing with the White Sox, like USA or something becoming a pitcher's park, the White Sox defense on the road let up like a 330 BABIP, and at home they were completely league average.
It's a tiny park.
I know. And I think that's screwing up the park factors because their hitting was terrible. Their pitching like looked good at better, like much better at home because they played really good defense. And this is all like me bullshit. Like this is me throwing spitballs, but I don't think the Cell is suddenly a pitcher's park and like one of the most predominant pitcher's parks in baseball.
Probably not since they made like no alterations to it. And like, I don't think wind patterns like drastically changed in the last 2 years.
Yeah, it would have to be like a climate change thing. I mean, we had kind of a weird summer.
The temperature is so, you know, the way some years, yeah, it's colder into June. I think this year was one of those years.
Like maybe Chicago drastically sank below sea level and it just wasn't reported widely. feel like someone would notice.
I mean, I don't know.
It's not as bad as Wrigley, but...
I tweeted at Jonathan Judge about this, and he was pretty defensive of his... He ran a mixed model, and it still said the cell was a pitcher's park, but it just doesn't seem to pass the eye test at all that such a thing were the case.
Yeah. Where do the White Sox rank in terms of strikeouts? Because I feel like them being a high strikeout team kind of neglects the amount of balls in play that the park would affect.
Yeah, I mean, they were pretty close. I think their starting rotation was like fourth in baseball in K's per 9. Clicking. Overall, in terms of K's per 9, they were sixth in baseball.
The pitching staff is built specifically to prevent runs in U.S. Cellular Field, and the lineup is built to prevent runs in U.S. Cellular Field, so I feel like it fits.
White Sox starting pitchers led the majors in innings pitched. There's a shocker.
Yeah, I don't know if we ever discussed it on the podcast, but that stat is crazy.
Oh,
thought it because I just watch Sox games all the time. The idea that other teams don't average like 100 pitches per start.
Does Matt know the White Sox? I believe we talked in the last podcast about it. They average. They're the only team in baseball that averages over 100 starts per start or 100 pitches per start. 100 starts per start would be.
Yeah, if it wasn't last week, it might have been. But or else we talked about it on the one before. But yeah, it's crazy.
Like, I didn't know you were allowed to start thinking about pulling your pitcher unless he's getting shelled or if he had reached 100 pitches.
Right. I mean, and as much as we give Robin flack for his occasional times of leaving people in too long, and I absolutely think he leaves in Danks too long, I think Danks would be really well suited on the Kyle Hendricks plan of throwing 5 innings per start before people realize that everything he's doing is smokes and mirrors. But
yeah, if they understood that Danks throwing 6 shutout innings doesn't mean he should throw 8 innings.
Right, exactly. Nice. But, sorry, I'm finishing my... I just ordered wings. I was finishing
my... Damn it, Ethan. I thought you were going to get something substantive.
It's like it's thighs. 10 wings. It's a lot of food. But I think for the most part, it's a positive thing that they... let their pitchers go so long. I don't think that they, other than a couple of Samardzija starts where it was just like, why the hell is he still in the game? And basically Danks his whole season. They weren't like, when we were complaining about him leaving pitchers in too long, it wasn't like, oh, this pitcher's about to get shelled. It was mostly like this pitcher, we don't want him to die. And so
I didn't really have big problems with that. Given this remarkably healthy starting pitching season.
They missed one start all year.
Because of a foot issue.
Because Chris Sale jumped off the truck funny.
Allegedly.
Yeah, I don't know what happened.
that was weird. I'm glad that ended up working out eventually.
Yeah, it sure worked out.
I mean...
Great year.
He did have kind of a weird season.
Chris Sale is... He became the third pitcher in the history of baseball to strike out more than 11.5 per 9 and walk less than 2 per 9. Like, yeah, his ERA was 3.4, but I think he really got some bad luck. Like,
being drafted by the White Sox.
Yeah. Well, being drafted by the White Sox is probably the reason why he's not a reliever at this point in his career. So, I mean, I think Don Cooper, Herm Schneider... like, our big reason why Chris Sale is one of the top 3 pitchers in baseball.
Maybe the Cardinals would have tried him out as a starter after he saved a couple of World Series for them.
The Cardinals would have taught him a curveball or something.
Yeah.
I don't think you can even throw a curveball with that delivery.
Yeah, it would still be 80 grade.
Yeah. But, I mean, there's not many orgs in baseball that can keep Chris Sale healthy. Like, I don't think. I mean, we don't know shit about mechanics. Maybe this is all bullshit. The Sox have... like, maybe they just happened to have a bunch of pitchers that were randomly healthy. But I think we're getting to the point where we're beyond saying that they're not anomalous. They're very anomalous.
That was something I saw being brought up on Twitter today. It's like the time period where Dusty Baker earned his reputation for abusing pitchers was not exactly like... We would kind of scoff on probably most of the writing about pitcher usage from like 2002.
Yeah, I mean, it's because it was two mega prospects in Wood and Pryor who looked so promising. One of the funny things I always notice with those two guys is I've been like every once in a while I'll look to search for K for nine leaders of all time because I always wanted to see like where Chris Sale ranks, and you always see like Wood and Pryor are like second and third in the history of baseball for career K per nine. But I mean, it's because he abused the shit out of those guys in 2003. Like they had a bunch of 120 pitch starts. But like since then, I don't think he's been particularly egregious. Like I don't think he killed Johnny Cueto. I don't think he killed. Did he have Latos there? I mean, Latos kind of died after he went to the Reds anyway.
Yeah, maybe. Latos was already having his issues before he went out to Cincinnati.
No, he went to Cincinnati after he was that year he was really good in San Diego.
Was it right after that? I thought he had kind of like a.
That looked like such a haul when they originally got it, and it didn't really turn into much. Grandel was pretty good, but like Yonder Alonso sucks ass.
Yeah, he's Avi the first baseman.
Basically, with a better contact tool.
Well, Avi would make plenty of contact if he didn't just have like that big hole in the strike zone he couldn't cover. Otherwise, he'd be good.
If the Sox had Yonder Alonso, they would be starting him every fucking day for way too long. I guess the Royals... Actually, he kind of had a decent year this year. He would have been the third best hitter on the White Sox.
Jesus.
And
so that means he's below average, right?
No, he had a 111 weighted run created plus. He would have been only worse than... Eaton and Abreu.
Jesus.
Yeah. It's really bad.
Trace looks hitterish.
Yeah, the thing with Trace, he looks awesome and his peripherals are awesome. It's not like he's like on some BABIP craziness, and he's a guy who would probably hit for a high BABIP anyway, but a guy that had like everyone's like, oh yeah, he has holes in his swing. He's not like he's probably a fourth outfielder. It seems weird that he would randomly pop up and like not have holes in his swing. I feel like he's a guy that I definitely would watch out for a second time through the league.
Yeah, I mean, even his September wasn't really like gangbusters. It was more like 700 OPS territory.
I mean, 700 OPS with good defense in a corner is fine. Like, he had elite defense in a corner and good defense in center field. Like, and also, like, there was a couple balls. And like, I know we can do this with everyone, but he got robbed of a home run in September. He got, he hit a lot of line drives at people.
Yeah, Castellanos robbed him on Sunday.
Yeah. Then he had two rockets on Sunday.
Yeah, he had a triple, and he probably had a double down the line that Castellanos jumped up and grabbed.
Castellanos is so bad.
He moves like he has bricks in his pants. He's brick pants to me.
That's another guy the White Sox would stick with way too long.
At like a high leverage, like they'd play him at third base too. They wouldn't move him or anything.
Well, he is at third base with the Tigers.
I know, but like that was kind of like a surprise turn of events that all of a sudden they went back to putting him back there.
Yeah, well, they traded Fielder and they moved Miggy. Miggy won an MVP because he was so team friendly and moved to third base to be a garbage defensive third baseman
and get hurt.
Yeah, I mean, for someone who's he's been hurt for like four years now and he's still winning batting titles and playing 150 games a year.
Except this year,
but he still won a batting title.
He's real good.
He's really good,
but. I don't see like how like getting hurt every year is. It's like he's portrayed as like this warrior, but like it's ultimately not good that it keeps happening.
At some point, it's gotta catch you.
Yeah, I mean that kind of like happened to Pujols, which is why everyone's scared about the Miggy contract. Though he would have been a free agent after this year, and I bet at coming off this batting title year, even with the injury concerns, I bet he gets more than he has left on his deal with the Tigers.
But I'm sure whatever he would have signed, we'd been like, that's going to end real ugly for you.
The Pujols money's so bad.
Hopefully they can work out some buyout for him where he just becomes like a city councilman.
Didn't they like offer him, I feel like there was a clause in that contract where he, after the year was going to be, or after his contract, he was going to like be offered a job with the Angels.
Yeah, it's guaranteed he gets a job in the organization. But, you know, by 2020, when America is a corporate-owned hellscape, he'll probably just be mayor of Anaheim.
I mean, he was fine that this... Man, he had 40 home runs in this offensive environment, and he was still only 16% above league average. He had a lower weighted run created plus than Adam Eaton, and he hit 40 home runs.
Not getting on base and not being able to move kind of just subtracts.
He had a 217 BABIP because he can't move.
I bet he hit his share of wall singles.
Yeah. Oh, absolutely. He's so slow. Plantar fasciitis is not fun, I assume.
Look into the future, Joakim Noah.
Joakim Noah's done too, though.
They say he's moving well.
That's what optimism. Murdered Carlos Quentin too, isn't it?
Yep. I think he went down from an assortment of injuries.
Yeah. He was aches and pains.
How fucked up did his body have to be? They just like walked out on a contract.
Yeah. At 32?
Yeah, Jesus. That did not go well.
In 2005, we probably would have said Carlos Quinn would be like... We probably would have hoped that he's... Or 2008, we probably would have hoped he's still on the White Sox in 2015.
Well, yeah, he seemed like the...
He was an MVP centerpiece candidate of the franchise. He didn't murder himself, yeah.
He was 36 home runs to the end of August.
He was so much better than Dustin Pedroia that year.
I mean, we didn't even like fully like think that he was an awful defender yet.
No. Yeah, that got bad in a hurry.
I mean, he stole 7 bases, and I think they were all like in April and May. So like we were like, oh, this guy can actually run too.
Oh, his slides were so ugly. Oh, it was just like someone getting pushed down the stairs.
And he was so good in 08.
I mean, his rate stats all together, he's always been good. Like he's always good.
Yeah.
Naked dry sings in the shower.
And that hair, good lord.
He was really good in 2013, too. Actually, he was really good in a lot. He was really good with the Padres when he was healthy.
Yeah, that's why his race stats still stand out. Like, it's just, he could never stay into a season.
I'm sure a book about 2008 White Sox would have been great. I'm now super sure of it ever since, like, that one day Brian Anderson filled in, just kind of gave some hints, like, yeah, Carlos Quinn is an absolute crazy person.
No, like he seemed like he was like psychotic. Like
we stopped him from chewing his fingers until they bled.
What is he doing now, do you guys think?
Well, that's probably why he retired. He couldn't take the mental anguish. He's ripping himself to shreds.
But like people who have that much like focus on something like that, what do they do after they retire?
Short selling? I don't know.
They could join CJ Wilson Mazda.
Or Blackwater.
Those commercials are asinine on the radio. It's like Adam Eaton's endorsing CJ Wilson Mazda. CJ Wilson is making a shit ton of money to be a very meh starter with the Angels.
Would you rather listen to the CJ Wilson Mazda commercials on a loop or Cars for Kids?
I don't know. One doesn't involve Adam Eden saying, I am Zoom Zoom Nation. So.
And Cars for the Kids is a little bit endearing.
No, that thing drives me mad.
I really like that when I was like, in like 08, when I think I was the first time I became privy to Cars for Kids, and I was like 13, that was a little endearing, that jingle.
Oh, yeah. Well, you were of age that you thought maybe that's how you'd get your first car, huh?
There is like a slight element or tint of what am I reading that's like starting to come into Adam Eaton's voice at the end of his Dictionation read? Like, I'm just saying gibberish. Is this going to be used forever? So who are we rooting for the playoffs?
Blue Jays, even if Burley's gone.
I think the Blue Jays are an easy favorite. I know everyone hates them, or a lot of people hate them, but I'd like to see the Dodgers go far in the National League.
I'd love to see Puig, and I think I want Kershaw to get a championship. I want Kershaw to just snap off in the playoffs, but the Mets would be a lot of fun too, especially if Uribe can come back.
Yeah, I wouldn't be mad about the Mets, and I'd love if Kershaw like destructed that stupid Kershaw can't pitch in October shit that everyone else always chirping about.
I want that Mets Dodgers ALDS to be I want there to be like 6 runs in that series in a 5-game series.
I want there to be like 6 Cespedes dingers. I wanted him to like drag him to the World Series and then parlay it into like a regular local morning show in New York that he hosts.
With Jerry Seinfeld.
Yeah.
That dude is going to get so much money, and I don't think I'm going to like the money.
Well, and didn't they build in a clause? Didn't the Mets work out something where they can still now re-sign him?
Yeah, they waived they can't sign him rule. He says he wants to stay in New York.
So it was just him saying, yeah, I like it enough to give you guys a running chance.
I like it enough to boost my market by including a major market team who probably really wants me back.
I definitely want you guys to recklessly bid on me in the offseason.
Yeah, that's the perfect situation for the Wilpons. They're going to be like, oh, look at us. We can actually spend money.
I am a big McCutchen stan, so I kind of want the Pirates to go far. I love that outfield.
Yeah, it's hard not to like the Pirates, in my opinion.
They kind of are doomed, but...
Arrieta's just... That dude's a buzzsaw. Part of me, I want to root for the Cubs. I want to see the Cubs win a World Series at some point in this era. I don't know if I want it to be this year, though.
I am... In the National League, like, I rooted for the Cubs in a lot of situations this year, but the playoff teams that are in there, I think the only team I'm really rooting for them against would be when they play the Cardinals.
Right. If they get past the Pirates, like, I'm not going to root against the Cubs in any situation.
Oh, I can't.
I mean, I think I'd be more likely to root against them if I lived in Chicago right now, because I don't know if I'd want to be in Chicago when the Cubs win the World Series.
Oh, I think that makes a big difference for me. The amount I've softened over, removing myself from all the people.
So my stance, like, the last couple of years is that I love the playoffs because everyone's team loses except for one. And I have grown to like hate all fan bases because they all carry these ridiculous misconceptions and overvalues of their prospects and their, rosters and whatever. So watching them all kind of go through this like emotional public destruction is very satisfying for me. And having the Cubs being like the fan base that I can most like directly witness on Twitter all the time has definitely made me like somewhat covet their demolition, but at the same time, I kind of covet everyone's demolition. That's kind of died off a bit this year. I don't really have any real beef with any Blue Jay segments of the fan base.
I would have really rooted for the Blue Jays if Mark Burley's shoulder didn't blow up. And like, if Mark Burley is pitching a World Series game again, it'd make me so happy.
Like, right now, this thing blowing up my feed of this goofy trash talking between the Pirates and the Cubs for, like, Wednesday's game that's sparked by, like, Arrieta responding to, like, a really bizarre tweet.
Yeah, I don't really know what that meant.
Basically just wants me to, like, now, like, my ideal situation is that they, like, go through this utter, like, 15-inning bloodbath, and then the next, like, the team that advances just gets eviscerated by the Cardinals, and it's all
no, fun. No, I don't want to see the Cardinals go to another NLCS. Not again. Also, losing Carlos Martinez hurts a ton for that team.
It comes with the return of Wainwright, though, no?
Great, but Wainwright's a reliever now.
Oh, is that how they're working it?
Yeah, they're not going to... He couldn't start this year. So what's going to happen is they're going to make the NLCS, and he's going to freeze Jonas Cespedes with a curveball in game seven with the bases loaded. Or he'll make...
And then do it to Beltran in the World Series.
Right, that's what I was going to say. The Yankees, like, I can't even root against the Yankees. I want to root against the Yankees because they're Yankees, but they have, for one, A-Rod would be fun as hell if he, like, just went crazy in the World Series. The reaction would be amazing to that. And then...
Now they're doing this play for CeCe thing, which is, like, totally sweet and endearing.
Yeah. And then also the Beltran thing. I mean, I'd love to see Beltran have some crazy October that, like, solidifies his Hall of Fame case, because that's a dude that I would vote for Hall of Fame who's absolutely not getting in the Hall of Fame.
Really? You think so?
That he's not getting in?
Yeah.
I don't think he... I think his regular season numbers just aren't eye-popping enough.
He's been too quietly good for a larger amount of time.
And he's that kind of dude who, like... He made everything so easy that it almost wasn't flashy.
He was the platonic ideal of a five-tool guy coming out. Why don't traditional writers just love those dudes?
They do.
And he built narratives in the playoffs, too, constantly. They should be all over that.
But everyone thinks of the Wainwright curveball, even though he's literally Babe Ruth in the... Like, he's played like Babe Ruth in the playoffs. Like, his numbers are... I think he has the second best career numbers in the playoffs of anyone over a certain number of plate appearances.
He's got a career 120 OPS plus, and he was a regular center fielder until like his early 30s.
He's in the 300-300 club and could get 400 home runs if he plays one more year.
This is stupid.
I don't think he gets in. I think that the writers... He has... The Yankees gave him a 3-year deal? Why? He's still being paid $15 million in 2016.
So he's going to make 400 home runs.
Yeah.
What if, like, Canerico gets more votes than Beltran? I feel like I'll have to stop being a White Sox fan out of protest.
Canerico's only going to get a couple votes. Canerico might drop off on the first ballot.
He probably should.
Oh, he absolutely should. There's no way in hell I vote for Paul Canerico for the Hall of Fame.
He's got, like, sub-30 career WAR.
Chris Sale has a higher career B-WAR than Paul Canerico. That actually might not be true. I think he had to have a really good last start to a higher career B-WAR than Paul Canerico. Chris Sale is something like 24th in baseball and in among active pitchers in B-WAR. He's the only guy 26 or under in the top 30, but Kershaw's 7th with and he's 27. And Burley's 1st in active B-WAR. Just random facts that I looked up in the last couple of days. If I spent as much time on school as I do work looking at baseball stats, probably would have a 4.0 GPA.
I pretty regularly for work have to do screen shares, and then I right before I do them, I like frantically try to shut down a shitload of baseball reference tabs so my screen doesn't show those.
Yeah, now that I realize we have a PlayEdX account with Sweet Spot, which I didn't realize. I've been just doing so many play index queries.
Yeah, you can get lost in that easy.
That Quintana stat I found today, for those who don't know, Jose Quintana has the most seasons of any pitcher in baseball history of 200 innings pitched or more, 3.6 ERA or less, and 9 or less wins. And he's done it 3 years in a row. He's the only pitcher in baseball history who's done that 3 years total, and he's done them 3 consecutive years.
Half man, half amazing.
With the worst support in baseball behind him.
I was really happy the way he closed out the year.
I was really happy with a lot of things he did this year.
He was just kind of like milling about, having like a lot of typical one-of-the-mill Jose Quintana starts, and then he just like finishes September House of Fire and just has a season that's as good or better than everything else he's ever done.
Yep. He is not all that different than peak Burley in terms of production. Less innings and better raw numbers on rate stat-wise.
He would have had a good case for AOL Pitcher of the Month in September, but he didn't win it because they gave it to Cody Anderson because he went 5-0. And I don't think...
Quintana might have gotten...
There's no way Quintana's ever won 5 games in a month.
He's never won 10 games in a year. There's no way he's won 5 games in a month.
I bet he hasn't won 4 in a month ever.
He probably, yeah, no, he's probably, his max is probably 3. I'm going to look this up now. So,
he's probably got like not 5 per month if you add his entire career, like in the month of May. Over his whole career, he probably doesn't have 5 wins.
He had a 2.95 ERA in the second half and a 1.50 ERA in 36 innings in September, October. Man, he's so good. Like I said, the White Sox could have 5 All-Stars next year and be a below 500 team if things don't work out right.
But they're not going to have – the guys like Jose Quintana are not going to make the All-Star team if they're below 500.
True. Jose Quintana is one of the rare guys who everyone says, oh, this is one of the most underrated players in baseball, and then doesn't eventually get overrated. Like, usually when there's a guy like that, eventually they just get way overrated because everyone's like, oh, this guy's super underrated.
Like, I love Jose, but he's not going to pitch a bunch of, like, 8-inning, 9-inning, like, 11, 12 strikeout games. So
no,
if they're definitely a bad team, he's probably giving them 6 innings, 2 earned runs, and they lose that game, and he's, like, 3-5 at the All-Star break, and he doesn't get in the All-Star game.
Yeah. Also, it'd be pretty insane if the Sox got 3 starting pitchers to the All-Star game. And that would take a huge jump from Rodon, but I'm just spitballing right now. Jose Quintana has 1 Fangraphs article, or 2 Fangraphs article that's mentioned his name since the start of 2015. Like, one of them is called Appreciating Jose Quintana. Then it's the Trade Value Series where Cameron raked him 41st. And then it's, can the top of the White Sox rotation make up for the bottom?
I think Jim Margulis actually did like a... I don't think that search on Fangraph's site stores all of them the same, like, in a logical way. Because I think Jim pulled them up one time. And it was just like, what is Jose Quintana? Jose Quintana's underrated. Appreciating Jose Quintana. Is Jose Quintana a stud or a dud? Learn more about Jose Quintana.
If you combine his stats from the last 3 years, like, and by the fact that he has just terrible defense behind him, he's not, like, he's mostly the conversation with him is he a 2 or a 3, but in terms of his production over the last 3 years, been a borderline ace. I mean, obviously there's more to being an ace than just, I think there's more to being an ace than just production. There's a certain, like, fuck you aspect to being an ace that, like, Chris Sale has, Arrieta has, that Quintana doesn't. But, man, he's so damn good.
Yeah, the top Google results from him are Appreciating Jose Quintana, Jose Quintana stutter dud, Jose Quintana is better than you think. What is a Jose Quintana? What does Jose Quintana do? It's a good sampling of Fangraph article titles. And then the next page is Barstool Sports, why the White Sox should trade Jose Quintana to the Red Sox.
Hey, I'm writing an article at some point this offseason. What can the White Sox expect in a Jose Quintana trade if they move him?
A bad rotation.
Bad rotation and Yasiel Puig or Gregory Polanco.
I think one is better than the other.
Yeah. I think if you get Yasiel Puig, you have to add Frankie Montas or more. But, like, I talked to Dodgers fans about that trade, and they're like, you know, that's not crazy. Which I assumed I would get rebuffed, like, that's pretty crazy.
Polanco probably won't get into, like, a fist fight with Abreu or something crazy, though.
Right. And I think you could probably get more than Polanco. Maybe you can get Starling Marte. But that dude's really good.
That would close the loop from when they missed out on Starling Marte because the Buscone came to their tryout with a gun.
Wait, what?
The White Sox are having a tryout with Starling Marte, but while
they basically had a deal in place,
the trainer that he had just like gotten rid of like came to that tryout to confront the new guy who had taken Starling Marte with a gun, and the scout for the White Sox like, fuck this, I'm out of here.
Jesus.
And that's how their deal fell apart.
He like offered money. It was almost a done deal. Yeah, and that was that.
That's what I was saying when the new market inefficiency is scouts who aren't afraid to die.
Didn't the White Sox have a scout that died recently?
Probably.
They also had a... Didn't they have a scout who saved someone from dying or something? like save someone in a very dangerous car crash or something like that.
I see what you're doing, Matt.
I slid it in there.
So,
how old are you?
We're at hour 20. What are you guys feeling like?
I'm feeling like I need to eat food.
My wings are coming soon.
Okay, I think we've tortured the listeners for long enough. Because they definitely can't control the user experience or stop things on their own if they want.
No, we're actually, like, very addicting. Our voices are like heroin.
Exactly.
Is in there bad for you, yes.
Yeah, especially because my voice is a little bit raspy from this cold that's murdered me over the last week.
You've had that for a month.
It's a week, and it finally is going away, but I still have a raspy voice.
Those wings, my wings clear your sinuses wings, right up.
My wings are here, so I should probably go.
Okay, enjoy your wings, everyone.
All right. Hello.